30 years of NBC, 10,950 days, from the first vibrant voice of the radio network born in 1926 to the coruscating color of today's television. We conjure up memories as we go, listening to echoes of voices and sounds, to contemplate the three generations that are, that were, and that will be. The Empire State Building stands today on the site of the birthplace of NBC. 30 years ago, the old original Waldorf Astoria Hotel occupied the spot. There, on November 15th, 1926, in the Grand Ballroom, they launched a network of 25 stations that ranged from Kansas City to Maine. That first program was a magnificent 4-hour and 24-minute radio spectacular, which, by the way, would be sensational even if repeated today. We can repeat a few features by reaching into the past and by recapturing some of the sounds from the days when NBC was born. There was, for example, a brief opening talk by NBC's first president, Merlin H. Aylesworth.
Beginning tonight, you will receive a new thrill in radio. In the future, those engaged in production will, through the power of radio broadcasting, with modern radio equipment, offer their talent, whether in song, drama, comedy, or orchestral music, with all of the professionals.
Walter Damrosch conducted the New York Symphony. Albert Stessel conducted the New York Oratorio Society. Tita Ruffo of the Metropolitan Opera sang, and the brilliant pianist Harold Bauer played exactly like this. Millions now living never heard the golden voice of Mary Garten. But from Chicago on November 15th, 1926, millions did hear her. About 5 million at least. Out of the past, here she is. We had comedy relief, too, in that first radio network. Back in 1926, the great musical comedy stars Weber and Fields did their bit. And then there was America's unforgettable humorist out in Kansas City. He spoke to us from the dressing room of a theater at the time, Will Rogers.
It seems strange that we don't hold the automobile speed record. There's millions trying to break it every day. Before we had this high type of civilization, which we're so thoroughly enjoying, why, we used to have wars to get rid of the surplus number of people. A fellow in England claimed that he got to heaven and that it was great, and he's sorry that they revived him again.
Cesar Sodero conducted the Met Opera Sextet. There were selections from HMS Pinafore, and there was the music of Edwin Franco Goldman's band. Just to show the unbelievable versatility of the network, its programming, and its possibilities, Let's listen back, the way it was in 1926. Now, don't get the notion that the first great network show was all long hair music. From 11:16 to sign-off time at 12:25, if you were wearing your earphones, you heard George Olson's band at the Hotel Pennsylvania. Then you heard from the Roosevelt Hotel Grill this famous greeting.
This is Ben Burney, the voice of experience speaking.
Elsa, and now the time has come. Lend thine ears to au revoir, pleasant dreams. Au revoir, pleasant dreams. Think of us when requesting your theme. Au revoir, a fond cheerio, a toodle doodle, a bit of a tweet tweet. God love you, and pleasant dreams.
Next, the dynamic B.A. Rolfe's orchestra went on the air from the Palais d'Or restaurant on Times Square. And to close the history-making evening, we had 20 marvelous minutes with...
Hello, everybody. Lopez speaking.
That, then, by digging into now ancient files, is our effort to stir your memories. And to keep a record, however fragmentary, of the greatest 4 hours in radio history. Because it started everything that has happened since. The first commercial ever to go on the air might just as well join our parade of memories. It was part of a 15-minute local show on good old WEAF. 4 years before the network was born. Want to hear it?
Friends, you owe it to yourself and your family to leave the congested city and enjoy what nature intended you to enjoy. Visit our new apartment homes in Hawthorne Court, Jackson Heights, where you may enjoy community life in a friendly environment.
And how about an early singing commercial?
Tasty yeast is tempting to your appetite. Creamy, wholesome candy, try a luscious bite. Vitamins are hiding in this candy bar. Pep, vim, and vigor linger where they are. Children like this lovely, creamy food delight. Let them eat it daily, every morning, noon, and night. You will see them growing stronger every day. Taking yeast is dandy, handy candy way.
One of the most popular show ingredients that NBC ever contributed to our electronic entertainment was the team. As the great Goebel might say, you don't hardly have none of them anymore. I mean teams like Billy Jones and Ernie Hare.
She's gone, let her go. You're not fast, but not too slow. She'll never find a fella like me. Just feel great, you just laughed. I tore up her photograph. She'll never find a fella like me.
Then in the late 20s and early 30s, we had a great boy and girl team. How about dialing back into the past with Frank Crummett and Julia Sanderson?
Same sort of whirl in the same round of joy.
Same making eyes and the same tender sighs.
Same moonlight walk.
Yes, yes.
Same silly talk. Same old duet sung by Adam and Eve.
Same sort of fibs that no one can believe. Oh, I thought the old game was one that I knew. I think he knows.
But it's so different with you.
And you have to be considerably more than 30 years old to remember when everything came to a standstill at 7 o'clock, while the whole country ran for its Nutridyne sets to hear...
Listen, Amos, You don't know politics like I do.
Tell me this, though. Why can't they have a Democrat and a Republican president at the same time?
Amos, the president of the country don't have nothing to do now. The trouble with that is, the Republican would get everything messed up for the Democrat, and vice versa.
There was another boy and girl team that started way back there, and still is remembered by today's young people.
It'll never work, McGee.
What do you mean it'll never work?
You claim that you can fix this radio set so it'll tune in programs that were broadcast years ago?
I'm rewiring it so I can tune it to different years instead of different stations, you see?
No, I don't.
Well, look, Tootsie, according to the McGee theory of radio Dianetics, which I'm the guy that thought it up, I claim that when you hear a broadcast once, that ain't necessarily the end of it, you see? It don't just disappear. In other words, old radio programs never die.
And there was a lot of home and fireside humor on the network, like a famous country store team.
Hello? Can you hear us? Hello?
Of course they can hear us. That's what they got all these wires hooked up for. Howdy, folks. This is Lum and Abner down here in Pine Ridge, and we want to wish you a happy
anniversary. Hello?
Hello? Abner, quit hollering.
Well, our voices has to carry a long ways, Lum. That's what they told us. Hello?
For goodness sakes, Abner, hush up and let me do the talking. As I was saying, me and Abner wants to wish you a happy anniversary, and...
Wait a minute, Lum. Who are we wishing this thing to?
Why, to NBC.
And to whisk you up to date for a second, did you remember Bert and Harry when they were Bob and Ray?
I'm Bob.
And I'm Ray.
Listen, listen, listen. The most sensational offer of a lifetime.
The Bob and Ray getaway car. The getaway car lets you carry out every crime from a holdup with simple assault to a big job on the First National with absolute ease and assurance.
Well, if you're that good at remembering, see what you can do with two movie stars who came to NBC fresh from What Price Glory.
And now for those two great motion picture stars, Victor McLaglen and Edmund Lowe.
Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. And we're very happy to be here for NBC's birthday.
Yes, but I'm a little disappointed. Why isn't that big shot from New York here?
Well, he had a slight accident this morning. He fell out of a swivel chair and his parachute didn't open.
Victor McLaughlin and Edmund Lowe, two characters who had old ladies waving parasols at streetcar conductors and using a newfound language. New for Grandma, that is. But before we bring you up to date, see if you can remember Bud Hulick and Ralph Dumke like this.
Gurney, how are your musicians tonight? Is this your all-boy orchestra here?
That's my little group. All in the black tonight.
All in the black. Do they look
he's
nice?
He's conducting. You get it?
Yes, sure.
Funny story there.
Very good. Just to make sure they're here, could we have them tune up just
you
for fun?
You want to tune up?
Just to make sure.
Tickets for the NBC Symphony, maybe.
Never mind, Gurney.
Sound just like the Sisters of the Skillet, don't they? Well, we could go on forever, of course, but there's so much to tell. So let's end our reminiscing by bringing you one of the best-loved teams of today. A boy and girl team from 10 years ago. See if you recognize them.
The letters that we get from people who listen to the radio program every morning, why, Tex, they're so constructive. I mean it. Even the ones criticizing us. There are lots of those. But I get a feeling of knowing the listeners really well on radio, and I never had that feeling in Hollywood.
I think I know what you mean, Jenks. It was the same way in the newspaper business. You were sort of insulated against feeling the readers of a newspaper. On the radio, you always feel as if the listeners could reach out and shake your hand or poke you in the jaw.
Wonderful memories we've stirred up for the old-timers. And for you kids who hear them for the first time, you should have been there. Religious programs constitute one of the oldest services NBC has offered its audiences. The beautiful and impressive services of the three major faiths have been with us on our Sabbath days and on special festivals from the very beginning. National Radio Pulpit was the first to become a network program, followed almost immediately by the Catholic Hour and Message of Israel. Here's how it was a generation ago.
Ladies and gentlemen, the National Broadcasting Company presents at this time each Sunday National Vespers, of which Dr. Harry Emerson Fosdick is the minister. Dr. Fosdick will now be heard in the call to worship.
Or perhaps you tune to this program.
The National Council of Catholic Men presents the Catholic Hour. Today is the 79th birthday of Pope Pius XI, to whom today's program is dedicated. Gathered here to do homage to His Holiness is a distinguished assemblage overflowing the world's largest and most beautiful broadcasting studio. The guest of honor, His Eminence Patrick Cardinal Hayes, Archbishop of New York, will speak to you later.
Or you may remember this familiar sound.
Tonight, the National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the United Jewish Layman's Committee, presents the Message of Israel. Rabbi Louis Mann of the Chicago Sinai Congregation, Chicago, Illinois, will deliver the sermon. And Rabbi Abraham L. Feinberg of Mount Nebo Temple, New York City, will preside.
If you remember Religion in the News, you'll remember a program which set forth pretty well the idea of the NBC service concept. Here's Walter Van Kirk.
There's just one thing I want to say before I report the news in the world of religion. This religious newspaper of the air, made available to you every Saturday at this hour through the courtesy of the National Broadcasting Company, has a policy of strict fairness to all religions. If it were otherwise, I wouldn't be here. I don't propose to waste my time or yours by engaging in a lot of senseless chatter about the alleged shortcomings of this faith or of that. Catholics and Protestants and Jews will get a square deal from Religion in the News.
The public reaction to NBC's service to the religious groups and organizations is best reflected in the following. And they're all congratulatory. Messages from Louis Finkelstein, President, Jewish Theological Seminary of America. From His Eminence Francis Cardinal Spellman. From Dr. Ralph W. Sockman. Also, there are greetings from Dr. De Sola Poole, Rabbi of the Spanish-Portuguese Synagogue. Norman S. Goetz, President, Federation of Jewish Philanthropies of New York. Right Reverend Monsignor Fulton J. Sheen, Catholic University, Washington. John W. Babcock, President, National Council of Catholic Men. Frank C. Goodman, Executive Secretary, Federal Council of the Churches of Christ in America. Samuel McCrae Cabot, General Secretary, the Federal Council of the Churches of Christ in America. And Mrs. Mary Margaret Henry, President of the National Council of Catholic Women. It's easy to determine when the first variety show appeared on NBC. The first program of November 15th, 1926 was, without question, the biggest and best as well as the first. But the pattern of a star headliner and assorted guests got started just about a year after the network began. Remember this pioneer?
In a cleaner state, alas, to Davnen of Shabbos, oh. Om die Kimen zu Herren, die schönste Ballabaten in Städtel, oh. Einer als Schneider, oh. Der zweite als Schuster, oh. And the dritter, a balagula, oh, the schönste balabaten in Seattle.
Al Jolson singing his favorite song, The Cantor on the Sabbath. Just about a year later, in 1929, Rudy Vallee took the Bobby Soxers by storm with his show. One of his greatest guest spots was the feud between Charlie McCarthy and the never-to-be-forgotten W.C. Fields. Let's tune back to those days.
Hello, Mr. Fields.
Hello, blood poison.
You know, Charlie really loved you, Mr. Fields.
Yes, I do. But I don't think Mr. Fields loves me.
Now listen, that's gone far enough. I've been a gentleman up to now.
Why, what's the matter, Bill?
Well, he's not going to tell me I don't love him. I'll break every knot in his body.
About a year later, we were to hear the debut of one of our greatest humorists, a man whose wit and satire has left an indelible mark upon radio.
I have been asked to make an announcement of minute importance, ladies and gentlemen.
Mr. Allen!
Oh, now wait. Order, please. If that's some poker player calling for chips, I'll be down there with a chip on my shoulder before you can put out the kitty.
Hello.
Well, sir, as I live and try to keep from feeling like the owner of a luggage shop with these bags under my eye, if it isn't Portland.
And who will forget the famous feud? With Fred hurling insults every week, friendly ones, of course, at a certain Waukegan violin player. Remember that other famous team, a way back when?
Mary, is there something you want to say?
Do I? I've been working on this all night.
What?
My poem.
Honey, I felt that. Go ahead, read it.
All right. A bunch of the boys were hooping it up at the Manumet Saloon. A kid sat there at the radio getting a ragtime tune. Mm-hmm. The songs and witty sayings floated through the air. Was it from Jack Benny? We don't know and we don't care.
Wow.
Then in 1933, another graduate of Vaudeville made his debut on NBC. The remarkable part of this fellow is he's still with us. And what a record he has in service to his audiences, at home and abroad, in peace and... Well, here's how the servicemen remember him.
And now we find Bob and Skinny Ennis at Camp San Luis Obispo.
Come on, Skin, we got to go into the quartermaster's office and get some equipment. Oh, quartermaster, quartermaster.
Just a minute, fellas. I'm busy back here with a government issue.
Oh, Professor, kiss me again.
Of course, the government doesn't issue this to everyone.
Kelowna, so you're the quartermaster. Come here and give us our uniforms.
All right, Hope, I've got your uniform already. Take off your clothes.
Okay, there, I got my clothes off.
Hmm, that reminds me, I must order another tub of butter for the canteen.
Bob made many road movies with another NBC variety star who turned up on the network less than a year later, in 1934. Here's Bing with a celebrated citizen from Van Buren, Arkansas. Let's listen in.
Well, Sir Bing, this little fish was sticking its little head right up out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of blowing bubbles and going boo, 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 boo at me. He said boo, boo, boo until I just had to take it with me.
Mm-hmm.
And all the way back to camp, he just kept wagging his tail and saying boo, 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 boo at me until there was only one thing left for me to do.
You brought him here?
No, no, I ate him for breakfast.
Well, that certainly should have put a stop to his boo, 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 eh?
No, Sir Bing, it didn't.
He continued to boo-boo-boo?
Yes, sir. Once before I ate him and twice after.
There was another funny man in the 30s who had the entire younger generation, and that means us, making some of the weirdest noises that ever assailed the human ear. Remember Joe Penner?
You want to buy a duck?
No.
Under no circumstances?
Under no circumstances.
You nasty man! What's the easiest way to raise corned beef and cabbage?
With a knife and fork.
Don't ever do that!
But there were different kinds of variety. So many, in fact, that it's just impossible to list them all. How about this team out of 1932?
Well, here's one from Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, I've been around that too.
Dear Chief, I'm in love with a girl.
Yeah.
And when I'm with her, I feel that I could kiss her till the cows come home.
Oh, great.
But I'm afraid because her two brothers are policemen, and I'm afraid they'll come home early and catch me. What shall I do? Signed, in love.
You're in love. I can understand you wanting to kiss her till the cows come home. But as you are afraid her two brothers will catch you, and as they are policemen, you better kiss her till the bulls come home.
Another one with a familiar voice at the helm, a voice with the dignity of a bishop and the program format that started quite a few of our modern stars on their way to fame. Here's a collector's item. Frank Sinatra in a network debut with the majestic Major.
Who'll speak for the group?
I will. I'm Frank Major. We're looking for jobs. How about it? Everyone that's ever heard us liked us. We think we're pretty good. And we play real swing music, too.
Real modern swing music. Ultra-modern music. What's your tune?
The Curse of an Aching Heart.
The Curse of an Aching Heart.
You made me what I am today. I hope you're satisfied. You drag me down and down until the soul within me dies.
And how about the rousing husking bee type variety show on NBC as early as 1933, coming to us from WLS Chicago?
Hey, 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 my halo face is here.
Coast. First on the docket, the good old Hoosier Hot Shot.
Are you ready, Hezzy?
Meet me tonight in the cow shed after the cows come home.
The Denning Sisters.
Just a little bit south of North Carolina, that's where my thoughts all stray. To the one I love best in South Carolina, I'm going back someday. I can hardly wait to see the face of the one I idolize. Just a little bit south of North Carolina, do 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 do.
Is, folks, that scintillating strummer of the Silver Strings, Eddie Peabody, the Banjo King.
It all came out of those wonderful machines in our living rooms. Machines that we hadn't quite gotten used to. This was the way one lady listener put it in 1926.
Well, you know, whenever a song finishes on the radio, I always start to get up to turn off the record.
NBC radio and television today are so thoroughly a part of the American home, and the modern woman is a person of so many interests, that you'll probably find it difficult to decide what constitutes a woman's program. When NBC Radio was young, we had some pretty impressive programming for the lady of the house.
Talk It Over. Emily Post, Anne Hard, and Mrs. William Brown Maloney are here in the studio and are going to talk over with you in your home some of the things we think are of interest to women everywhere. The National Broadcasting Company has planned this series with a desire to bring to you the ablest and best that we can give. We know that you are critical, informed listeners.
We had fun, too, when two of our great sports reporters covered a national crochet contest for the ladies. We take you now to Clem McCarthy and Bill Stern.
Okay, Harry Bellow introduces, so here we go. And now I can see a lady over there who does not even look at her stitching. She's looking around at other people, but, oh, you should see the speed of those fingers. And now, Bill Stern.
Thank you very much, Clem. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Hemstitch McCarthy just giving you a blow-by-blow description of this crocheting contest, the first of its kind held over the networks of the National Broadcasting Company. For some of you people who don't know what crocheting is, it took me years to find out.
We had famous women authors, like Adela Rogers St. John, to bring the women's viewpoint of news into our homes this way.
The National Broadcasting Company brings to you at this time another in a series of brief talks by Adela Rogers St. John.
Good morning. Last Thursday night, for the first time in 7 years, the millions of people who tune in to hear Rudy Valley's broadcast were amazed not to hear the famous golden voice greeting them with, "Hello, everybody, this is Rudy Valley." Now, that was news. Thursday morning in a small hospital out near the Pacific Ocean, Faye Webb Valley died in the arms of her father.
And who doesn't remember
Miss Nellie Revelle?
Oh,
Hello there, Nellie. How are
you? Oh, hello, Jack. Well, today it's going to be my pleasure to interview an ex-wrestler, an ex-baseball player.
Wrestler? Baseball player? Why, Nellie, I thought, believe it or not, Bob Ripley was your guest today.
Well, I am interviewing Bob Ripley, artist, author, radio entertainer, and impresario of oddities.
We might bring up the observation that some of the lady commentators had strong sentiments about men. Listen to Helen Jerome on a tantalizingly titled show called
But Women Have Brains. Miss Helen Jerome, outstanding playwright. Miss Jerome.
Well, thank goodness. The civilized beings who arranged this broadcast have not billed me as woman playwright on the air. You never hear of a man playwright, or indeed a man anything. The idea being that everything is to be expected of the once lord of creation.
And early in radio, we heard a voice which has drawn more feminine fan mail than can be counted. Millions of pieces of mail which she still receives on NBC Radio.
One of the groups we've always been interested in is the USO. Who hasn't? And we've got readings today from the President Lindsley F. Kimball and from General Frederick Osborne, Chairman of the New York USO, J.A. Urus. The executive secretary of the National Board of the YMCA has remembered us.
Yes, Mary Margaret McBride. It wouldn't be radio without her. Someday, a ponderous electronic brain will be able to compute the songs that have been sung over NBC radio and television since it all began 30 years ago. Let's reach back here and there in space for the voices that gave us popular songs, tunes from operettas, arias from the Metropolitan, anything. How about Ann Jameson? Or the silver-masked tenor, Joe White.
And the twilight falls, love me when love light calls. Love me in your dreams at night. I love you in mine.
Remember the Maxwell House Showboat with Lanny Ross?
Thank you. That makes me feel like saying, moonlight and roses bring wonderful memories of you.
And the revelers?
Just feel great. You just laughed. I tore up her photograph. She'll never find a fella like me.
She has that kind of skin you love to touch.
And that is how I got it Dutch.
Those things never get you much.
Well, let's not speak of that.
Well, let her go far and wide. I enjoyed the buggy ride. She'll never find a fella like me.
And a very young and beautiful Connie Boswell.
I can't go on. Of everything I had is gone. Stormy weather sends my man and I ain't together. Keeps raining on.
From the Met, beautiful Gladys Wartheout.
Night may be the night when he will appear. Tonight may be my true lover is here. He may be a torero, he may be a vaquero, for he. Thank you.
And another Metropolitan Opera favorite who moved from radio to television with The Harvest of Stars, Jimmy Melton.
And when I die, you can bury me neath the western sky on the lone prairie. Hi-ya!
And while we're rushing through this great array of sound, let's not forget some of the pioneers. Vaughn DeLeith, for instance.
And I listen to them croon. There's two lonesome people in the whole wide world. That's me and the man in the moon. Just before I'm counting sheep.
And how about Lucille Manners? Conrad Thiebaud. For a fast switch, how about Ukulele Ike, Cliff Edwards? And back again to one of the real top voices of opera and the air, Lawrence Tibbett.
Toreador en garde, toreador, toreador. Et songe bien huitant, j'en combattant, un œil noir te regarde, et que l'amour t'attend, toreador, l'amour, l'amour.
And the roster wouldn't make old-timers happy without a few seconds with Ruth Etting.
Oh, joy in paradise, at last I found you. Land of make-believe, come true.
And the voice that Fred Allen once described as the one-man trio, John Charles Thomas.
In Jerusalem land,
bound to heaven, bound to heaven, flying high, I'm flying high, right to the top seat in the sky, rising through you, to receive my soul's reward. Howdy, seven, come 11, come on along, come on along, come on and join that Caleb song. Yeah, howdy do ya, hallelujah, in the kingdom of Hallowed.
Or maybe you'd like to hear one of the early Sweethearts of the Air. Here's Jessica Dragonette.
Yearning, burning glory,
here's another beautiful star who numbered her fans by the millions, Vivian Della Chiesa. Wonderful voices, heard many times on NBC wavelengths all over America. But there was one sound, a sound which sang, a sound not made with voice, a beautiful sound we'll never hear again, except right here. The Magic Taps of Bojangles Bill Robinson. One of the most interesting of the many sides NBC has presented to the world we live in is the quiz program. People often have said that if school lessons were conducted the same way, we'd all learn a lot more. Well, maybe. But let's scan the 30 years of NBC and see how it began. Remember when they paid off in cash prizes like this?
It's Paul Wing's spelling bee between six men of Dartmouth College and an equal number of men from Brown University of Providence, Rhode Island. Here's the spelling master, Paul Wing.
Now for today's match. In addition to fighting for the honor of their respective universities, the contestants are competing for four prizes. $25 for the best speller of all, $15 for the second best speller on the winning team, $15 for the best speller on the losing team, and $10 for the second best speller on the losing team. And now, Arthur, who's the first speller?
Then the money went up to impressive heights like this.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Vox Pop, the voice of the people, is on the air at the stage entrance of Radio City Music Hall Theater in New York. Jerry Belcher and Pox Johnson, as usual, top the questions. To the five persons whose questions are adjudged best will be presented the gorgeous Elgin men's wristwatch. To everyone who submits a question, whether or not it is accepted, will be given a package of five Mole razor blades. So, here they are.
For your interview, Fox, you ready?
All right, Mr.
You
President.
Bet I'm ready, Jerry. Right. Come up here, please.
Now, tell me, please, are you working in an organization, do you?
Knowledge was paying off all right. But was it worth coming back next week? Listen to True or False, if you will, like this.
And now we welcome the conductor and arbiter of True or False, your host and friend, Dr. Harry Hagen.
Thank you.
Everybody on True or False wins a prize, one of those attractive Williams gift kits. There's one for each of our 12 contestants tonight. And more than that, Dr. Hagen has five crisp $5 bills for the members of the winning team this evening, and $25 for the grand winner of the entire contest.
So let's get on with True or False and find out who that grand winner's going to be.
And perhaps you remember this one.
Presenting Dr. IQ. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. All right, Donald Dowd, our first contestant of the evening, please.
I have a lady here, Doctor.
$6 for the correct answer to this one. The former capital of China was named Peking. By what name is this city now known? No coaching, please.
I'm sorry, Doctor. I don't know.
Peking. However, give that lady a box of 24 bars of chocolate Milky Way and two kit tickets to next week's production here at the Chicago Theater, Daughters Courageous.
Next came a program which started a whole new approach. The listening audience asked the questions, and the answers came from the performer's mic. Listen.
We present tonight the first in a series of programs called Information, Please. A new type question and answer contest in which you, the very much quizzed public, will quiz the professors. If your questions are used, you are entitled to $2 for each one and $5 additional if the board fails to answer your question correctly. I want you to meet our intellectuals, Simon Legree, Clifton Fadiman.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. Let me tell you about the board of experts for tonight's broadcast. First, Bernard Jaffe, Bushwick High School. Next, Mr. Marcus Duffield, the Herald Tribune. Third, Dr. Harry Overstreet, College of the City of New York. And finally, Franklin T. Adams, FPA.
But on NBC, it soon became evident that editors, professors, and musicians had no monopoly on mental mastery. Youth, always popping up to surprise its elders, behaved impressively on the network.
Hello, everybody. The quiz kids with me tonight are Richard Williams, age 11, Joan Bishop, 14, Harvey Fishman, 11, and Gerard Darrow, 9. Now, Richard, listen to this problem. Suppose some 60 million people are listening and everyone shook hands with everyone else, and if the handshakes click off at the rate of 1 a second, how long must the party last to get everybody acquainted? And you have only a little while to get your answer, Richard, so you get to work. Richard, do you have that math problem?
57,077,624 6/10 years.
Today, things are just a little different. Not too long ago, a modern quiz kid type young man came to NBC Television's The Big Surprise. His was a weekly step-by-step exposition of trading on that complex of all complexities, the stock market. He had all the answers. The prize? A mere $100,000 before taxes. Patriotism is a thing for which no one takes bows. But for the record, NBC gave its share of men and minds to the war effort before Pearl Harbor and during the years of crisis. It's best typified by this program.
National Defense Week. The Reserve Officers Association of the United States presents When Country Calls, a true story of our war for independence, with Jackie Cooper, Edward Arnold, Claire Trevor, Edmund Lowe, Alan Dinehart, Michael Kent, Tristram Coffin, and John Fee. Written especially for radio by Captain Charles D. Bayless.
The responses to NBC's many services in many phases of keeping a nation informed during a world war is best summarized by the words of those in high places.
The Undersecretary of War, the Honorable Robert P. Patterson.
Tonight, as I speak, a staff of NBC commentators and engineers is in the Carolinas, ready to report the final phase of the great army maneuvers, which begin tomorrow at dawn. Radio has performed one of the most brilliant public services in its history in reporting the development, the training, and the achievements of the new Army of the United States. Tonight, I am glad to congratulate the members of the radio industry upon that splendid performance. Radio has helped to make this the best informed nation in the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Honorable Frank Knox, Secretary of the United States Navy.
My old friend Niles Trammell, President of the National Broadcasting Company, ladies and gentlemen, I am very happy to participate in this anniversary observance for two specific reasons. First, to thank the National Broadcasting Company for its most willing and enthusiastic cooperation with the United States Navy on many separate occasions. Secondly, to add my tribute to countless others for the fine public service the American system of broadcasting has rendered during the present emergency. Radio is doing its part to bring about that unity of determination, unity of effort, and unity of ideals, which must culminate in this nation's unity of purpose.
When NBC was less than 6 weeks old as a network, we were flexing our coast-to-coast muscles with a New Year's Day 1927 football game featuring Graham McNamee's description of the Stanford-Alabama game at the Rose Bowl. What was the world coming to? People in shirt sleeves in sunny California. People in wintry nighttime in New York hearing this.
The mighty Titans of Stanford threw back the charging Southerners, and now it's second down and goal to go. Stanford is screaming for its team to hold, and how those boys are holding, but Alabama has three more tries if the gun doesn't go off and put an end to their hopes. They're lining up again. Stanford desperately determined to keep the ball from crossing that last white line, and Alabama just as determined to put it over. They're out of the huddle, up to the line. Stands are silent now, and you can hear Barnes calling the signals. 45, 27, 32. The ball's passed. Johnson has it. And he's over. It's a touchdown. Johnson, diving, fighting, smashing, drove through the mighty Stanford wall and smashed over for a touchdown. And now the Stands are going wild.
Then on another occasion, there was the breathtaking play in another Rose Bowl game when the antics of a dazed player gave the listening audience a case of coast-to-coast apoplexy.
Roy Regals, the California center, scooped up a Tech fumble deep in Tech territory. He got bumped around a bit, finally got squared away, and he saw a couple of goalposts and started for home. Unfortunately, it was his own home and not the opposition's, and how he did go down that field. Benny Lowne, that fast California back, took out after him, but Regals was an inspired runner for the moment, and Lam couldn't stop him until he had reached his own 2-yard line.
And since sports broadcasting started an immeasurable skein of firsts for NBC, it might be worthy of note that on September 22nd, 1927, with the network less than a year old, 69 stations brought this thriller to the nation from Soldiers Field, Chicago, the famous Long Count.
Kearney shot a hard left to Dempsey's face, which he follows up with two mean lefts to Dempsey's face. Then he lands a right, and then Dempsey comes back, and now, Kearney, Kearney is down! Kearney is down! From a barrage of lefts and rights to the jaw and the head. The count is going on, Kearney's still down, Dempsey is on the other side of the ring now. 8, 9, Kearney is up, and now they're at it again. And then suddenly Gene did leap in with the right and the left, and as he did so, the bell rang, and it was almost a new champion. Almost, but not quite. Take it away, Phil.
Yes, not quite, Graham. Gene Tunney has never been knocked down before, but he certainly hit the canvas this time. But Dempsey made the fatal mistake of standing over Gene when he fell instead of backing to the opposite corner. And several very, very valuable seconds elapsed before Dempsey woke up and moved away and let the count go on.
Now see if you recall this famous voice bringing the network the first broadcast of a Kentucky Derby in 1929.
And rounding the far turn, Fly Van Dusen is still kicking mud on the 20 youngsters behind him. He leads into the home stretch by 2 lengths. And the favorite, Blue Larkspur, in the famous Colonel Bradley colors, makes one last challenge, but he can't do it. But look out, on the outside, here comes the California colt, Nishapur. He's coming at Clyde Van Dusen. The jockey pony Nakati shakes his whip, and the son of mighty man-o-war comes away. Clyde Van Dusen by 3 lengths.
And Clem McCarthy covered the first broadcast of the Preakness with the same staccato description.
Will Whirlaway insist on going to the outside, or will he stick to the rail? And here comes the answer, fans. Arturo is asking Whirlaway for speed, and Whirlaway is fairly shouting to the colts in front of him, "Get out of my way. Here I come." And Whirlaway dashes through on the inside. He's fifth. He's second. He turns for home in the lead, runs on away, and Whirlaway wins the Preakness by 6 lengths.
30 thrilling years with McNamee, White, Hicks, Bond, Slater, McCarthy, Wilson, Stern, Nelson, and many more. As we stood on the brink of television, we heard Bill Stern.
Just a few moments ago, a game ended in Dyke Stadium in Evanston, Illinois. A great football game which was won by the Buckeyes of Ohio State 39-27. They beat the Northwestern Wildcats. It began 7-0, and it kept changing all afternoon long. And not until the final gun had sounded were we sure who the winner was, because the Northwestern Wildcats, even though defeated, were fighting their way back and clawing like tigers as they attempted to get back into the running.
It hasn't all been boxing, football, and horse races. The record of firsts includes baseball, tennis, yacht races, auto, canoe, soapbox, and frog jumping races, basketball, Olympics, track. And television of 1956-57 notwithstanding, a lusty youngster called Monitor now breathes weekend vigor into many more of America's favorite outdoor activities like this.
The Masters Tournament has reached the big moment. Lindsey Nelson's on the scene for monitor, so let's go there.
Hello, everybody. This is Lindsey Nelson speaking from the Augusta National Golf Club in Augusta, Georgia. Dr. Kerry Middlecoff will be playing up to 18 here. If he gets his par 4 on 18, he will be in with a 71, one under par, a 280, and he will be the winner of the Masters Tournament. Middlecoff shot up now as they race across the fairway, and he's up onto the green, right to the pin, and almost made it.
NBC began in a shimmering shower of music. And it has spoken the universal language of the ages ever since, in a glowing history of ear-pleasing sound. Take one of the earliest of the regulars, in 1927, the General Motors Show.
Tonight, General Motors inaugurates a radio program. Irving Talbot, the Buick Orchestra, and the male chorus open the program with Stout-Hearted Men.
And another great orchestra from the earliest days, the City Service Concerts. Doesn't remember the RCA Magic Key program with Frank Black conducting. On the popular side, too, another early program. How about Glenn Miller and his band?
Good evening, everyone. This is Glenn Miller bringing NBC a Chattanooga Choo Choo full of congratulations from our whole gang.
Was a program that just about stampeded the younger set and even made Grandpa take a new view of Dixieland jazz. Let's sit in on the Chamber Music Society of Lower Basin Street. That part over if you want. But let us go on the road with a famous traveling company, the College of Musical Knowledge.
Evening, folks. Here we are in Buffalo tonight, and since I'm the honorary mayor of Buffalo for today, I can officially say congratulations from the city of Buffalo. Right, chillin'?
We'd like to have you hear our version of Tonight We Love.
Record, of course, of the 30 NBC years would be complete without a few bars from the Clico Club Eskimos. And we can't leave out the A&P Gypsies either. And let's not forget another old favorite, the Ipana Troubadours. And to top the shining crown of NBC's musical greatness, there was a November night in 1937 when the network gave to all America the full meaning of a memorandum written by a young radio engineer who suggested a radio music box for bringing music into the home by wireless. Now we had it. The NBC Symphony.
National Broadcasting Company invites you to hear another concert with the NBC Symphony Orchestra under its celebrated conductor, Arturo Toscanini. The applause of our studio audience has indicated the entrance of Maestro Toscanini. And in just a moment, our concert will begin as we hear the classical symphony in D major by the contemporary Russian composer, Sergei Prokofiev.
Just see Toscanini humming to himself. And the wonder of music is it goes on forever with NBC. Through a recent day festival of music, a Sadler Wells ballet, and in exciting TV spectaculars.